Power on.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Pop Culture Retro-Rama podcast. I'm your host, Vic Sage, and I'm here to share memories, thoughts, and information on all manner of retro-related properties. Movies.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Music.
I want my MTV. All right.
Comic books.
These ain't your daddy's comic books, fanboy.
And toys.
It's Castle Grayskull. And it's mine.
Broadcasting to you from the depths of the Pop Culture Retrorama Vault. So, come join us, won't you?
Now, you're playing with power.
We have transport.
Welcome back, friends, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us once again on the Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. I hope you are all having an excellent new year so far. The subject for today's show is the 1987 action figure line from Hasbro that, in my mind, successfully merged both a science fiction and fantasy setting while also tapping into the awesomeness of holographic stickers. I am, of course, talking about the toy series Visionaries, Knights of the Magical Light.
It is a time when magic is more powerful than science, and only those who control the magic control destiny. They are the Visionaries.
Visionaries, Knights of the Magical Light.
The Visionaries was a toy line that attempted to tap into the popularity of the 3D hologram craze of the time. The likes of the A-Team, Dungeons & Dragons, the Transformers, Gremlins, Masters of the Universe, and more were producing 3D hologram stickers that you could slap onto your favorite Trapper Keeper or school notebook. Or, in the case of myself, perhaps your grandparents were kind enough to devote an entire closet door where you could slap and tape up anything you wanted in an effort to avoid anything accidentally being hung up elsewhere in the house. So, with the popularity of holograms, how smart was it to use them as part of a toy, to simulate a transformation, say a character tapping into the magic of their animal totem, rewarded to them by a powerful wizard, and becoming a mighty lion, or powerful gorilla? Or perhaps, the 3D hologram technology could be applied to a character's power staff, and with the reciting of an ancient verse of power, have the ability to unleash a demonic and destructive force that would smash anything in its path, or be given the gift of supreme knowledge. That is what Hasbro did back in 1987 with the Visionaries, the Knights of the Magical Light toy line. And I am sad to say that it did not succeed. The Visionaries, I believe, is a handful of toy concepts that when we step back now, we can totally see and appreciate what Hasbro was attempting to do. Because, quite frankly, back then, as now, it is a legitimately great concept. A planet known as Prismos that is a technological wonder is thrown back into the Dark Ages when the three sons of Prismos realign, causing all technology to fail and signaling the rebirth of an age of magic. A handful of knights, rallying under the banner of the heroic Spectral Knights and the villainous Darkling Lords, are rewarded with magical totems and staffs of power by an irritable wizard known as Merklin. After accepting and completing his challenge to prove their worth, it is these knights, both valiant and devious, who, as Merklin points out, are visionaries, and possess the ability, for good or ill, to use these gifts to save the people of Prismos, or rule them with an iron fist. The Visionaries also happen to be one of a handful of 80s toys that, for one reason or another, just didn't find the audience it needed. Off the top of my head, I would point to another Hasbro toy line, the Inhumanoids, a blending of ancient H.P. Lovecraft-inspired monsters who threatened to conquer the world from deep within the Earth, and a heroic team of scientists and adventurers using their technology to oppose them. A totally great concept. Much like with the Visionaries, it had an animated series, comic books, but it too sadly failed. Or you could look at Coleco Sectars, or even the rival toy line for the Visionaries by Tonka, the Supernaturals, which was released the very same year as the Visionaries, and beating them to the punch by a couple of months as I understand it. In fact, I recently wrote an article about the Supernaturals for the Pop Culture Retrorama site. Doing research for that failed toy line got me to thinking about how much I loved the Visionaries, and that is why I decided to devote this episode to that toy line. For myself, I was first introduced to the Visionaries thanks to the animated series that we picked up on our rabbit-eared television from a wonderful TV station from my youth known as Tulsa 23. This is the same channel I would watch The Adventures of the Galaxy Rangers, Silverhawks, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, and so many other fantastic animated shows while waiting for the school bus or while eating breakfast on Sunday mornings. Pretty soon, the Visionary toys were being carried in my neck of the woods, and I was lucky enough to bring home the Lancer Cycle toy, which came with the Spectral Knight figure known as Ektar. I can still recall when I was fortunate enough to pick up a new G.I. Joe or Transformer, how long I would spend reading the information provided on the tech spec or file cards. With Visionaries, I did the very same thing, including reading the magical effects that the uttered ancient verse would provide. In the case of Ektar in his Lancer cycle, the rhyme was, "Shield this craft from one and all, reflect, deflect, depose, and fall." When looking at the windshield of the cycle, turning the toy so that the light would catch it just right, you would see two arms appear, casting a magical energy shield. And while playing, it generally meant Ektar was going to crash straight through some Darkling Lords. That Christmas of 1987, I received a bunch of Visionary toys. The odd thing was, every single toy was a Darkling Lord. So, I had one good guy and an army of bad guys. Being a kid of the 80s, I did what I always did. Recruited the likes of some G.I. Joes to help out Ektar. Interestingly enough, the only toys that I never mixed together were the action figures from the DC Superpowers collection and Marvel's Secret Wars. Not really sure why I drew a line in the sand there with those toys, but it was there. Now, I want to let you all know that producing this particular episode has been something of a beast. Because, unlike say when I tackled The Shadow or Scooby-Doo, where there was quite frankly too much information, with the Visionaries, it is the exact opposite. With other toy lines, such as Masters of the Universe, we now know that it was a combination of talented people like Mark Taylor, Roger Sweet, and Donald F. Glut, among others, who helped create that memorable franchise. But here's the thing. There's just so very little known about the creation of the Visionaries. And I don't know. Perhaps that has to do with the toy line failing. Since it wasn't successful, and in some cases even widely remembered, the knowledge of those involved here have been lost for the time being. At least, that is what I was beginning to think when my research kept hitting dead end after dead end. Online resources parroting pretty much the few sentences you can find on the Wikipedia. Although, it was the Wikipedia that gave me my first bit of knowledge. While growing up, thanks to the Visionaries comics that were produced under Marvel Comics' kid-friendly Stars line, and knowing that Marvel had a hand in the creation of both Hasbro's G.I. Joe and Transformers toy line, comic books and animated series, I had assumed that the awesome story and characters of the Visionaries were thanks to Marvel as well. For 33 years, I was under that assumption, and I was totally wrong. Of sorts. There's still a small connection to Marvel, but I'll get to that in just a bit. Bear with me as I go off on a tangent about both Hasbro and Marvel. It was a partnership that was strong enough to create two franchises that are still loved and bearing fruit today. That is obviously G.I. Joe and the Transformers. It all started actually back in 1982, when Hasbro was beginning to put into plan the return of the G.I. Joe toy series. Although, this time, instead of the 12-inch action dolls from the 60s as well as the 70s, they were going to manufacture action figures that were more like what Kenner was doing with their Star Wars line. Figures that were 3 3/4 inches tall. Supposedly, this relationship was started at, of all places, in the men's room of a charity event that the then president of Marvel and the CEO of Hasbro were attending. Jim Shooter, who at the time was the editor-in-chief for Marvel Comics, said in a 2010 interview with the Graphic NYC site, quote, "They were talking about each other's respective businesses, and it came up that Hasbro wanted to reactivate the trademark on G.I. Joe, but they were trying to come up with a new approach. Marvel's guy was like, we have the best creative people in the world. Let me bring in this editor-in-chief of mine, and we'll fix it for you." End quote. It's a really fascinating article, especially if you were also a fan of the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero series of toys, comics, and cartoons. I will, of course, be sure to include a link to the full article itself on the Pop Culture Retrorama site in the article post for this podcast. This successful partnership was repeated in 1984 with the Transformers. Marvel Comics, like they had done with G.I. Joe, basically came up with the names of the characters for the toy series, their biographies, pretty much all of the important story elements and personalities of the characters when you get down to it. Hasbro, along with Marvel Productions, the film and television arm for Marvel Comics at that time, worked with Sunbow Productions to first produce animated television ads for G.I. Joe in 82. They were actually making 30-second animated ads to inform kids what the new toy series was all about. But it was being used to advertise the new Marvel comic book series. As I've read online, there was some kind of legal loophole at that time that allowed them to produce an animated commercial if it was for a comic book, but not just for the toys themselves. Marvel, Sunbow, and Hasbro would go on to co-produce not just animated series for G.I. Joe and Transformers, but Inhumanoids, Jim and the Holograms, Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines, and even My Little Pony and Friends, to name a few.
Super Sunday, the adventure series that gives you three times the excitement.
What's the future in your hands?
And Bigfoot.
Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines.
The interesting thing about that Super Sunday Show commercial is that while Inhumanoids and Jim were toys produced by Hasbro and would go on to graduate to their own animated series, Robotics was a property of Milton Bradley. It seems online, looking at old toy boxes and such, this is the case. But while watching the end of the animated Robotics cartoon, though, it definitely says copyright Hasbro 1985. Perhaps Hasbro merely licensed it from Milton Bradley. Back to the visionaries. It appears that in 1987, Hasbro was going to attempt something different on multiple fronts. An entirely brand new and original toy line. Where G.I. Joe was obviously different than the original toy series, it still had the name recognition of the earlier toy line. And, with the Transformers, Hasbro was initially using Takara Tomy's already existing line of transforming toys that were produced for the Microman and Diaclone toy lines. Actually, for what it's worth, Mego, in the 70s, obtained the license for the Microman figures first, rebranding them as Micronauts, which Marvel Comics would produce an absolutely stunning comic book series thanks to the legendary Bill Mantlow, convincing Jim Shooter to pick up the license, which Mantlow would become head writer for said series. With this new toy line, instead of a team of highly trained multinational soldiers protecting the world from the evil organization known as Cobra, or focusing on the eons-long war between sentient, shape-changing robots from Cybertron, Hasbro, as I've pointed out already, was going to get medieval.
It is a time when those who control the magic control destiny, where spectral knights battle evil darkling lords.
Back to the magical light. Visionaries, the magical powers they find. Visionaries.
It's coming, an amazing holographic world erupting in furious battle as the visionaries fight for the power of the magical light.
Visionaries.
Coming soon from the makers of Transformers.
Visionaries.
For some reason, and I have not been able to find said reason, Hasbro decided to not rely on Marvel Comics to come up with the characters and lore for the Visionaries. Although, they did hire Sunbow Productions, who worked with TMS Entertainment in this case, to handle the actual animation. And, let me say right now, that compared to a lot of the classic 80s animated shows, Visionaries is a wonderful-looking series. Of course, considering that TMS, or Tokyo Movie Shinsha, also handled the animation for Lupin the Third, the Mighty Orbots, Galaxy High, the Littles, and the Real Ghostbusters, to name a few, what else would you expect but it to look amazing? Sunbow Productions was co-founded by Lee Gunther, who just so happened to be a co-founder of Marvel Productions. See, I told you there was sort of a Marvel connection anyway. Sunbow Productions, which eventually became Sunbow Entertainment, was also co-founded by the Griffin Bacall Advertising Agency. It was they that were apparently hired for those early 30-second G.I. Joe animated comic book ads. I think, as you can already tell with Visionaries, compared to some of the other 80s toy lines, as I keep mentioning, there just is not as much detailed information readily available online. However, I did luck out at last, though, with Visionaries.net, and got my first piece of solid information on the creation of the Visionaries, in an article written by David Mapes on November 7th of 2015, focusing on the unproduced Iron Mountain playset, the home of the Wizard Merklin. David mentions he was able to speak with some of the team members from Abrams Gentile, who are, and I quote, "the original designers and owners of the Visionaries brand," end quote. Now, when I came across that, I felt like I had been given Arzon of the Spectral Knight's power staff of wisdom.
"A whim, thought, and more is sought. Awake, my mind, thy will be wrought.
Address me as bearer of knowledge."
Okay, to be fair, if I did have Arzon's staff of wisdom to call on, I would be giving you a lot more information. But it really felt like I had found the bearer of knowledge, because this led me to a couple of things. Watching the end credits for the Visionaries animated series, there is a title card that states, quote, "original concept licensed by Abrams Gentile Entertainment Incorporated," end quote. Which would mean that Hasbro's Visionaries toy line wasn't exactly 100% their concept, right? Especially if Abrams Gentile owns, or at least at the time of the article, owned the Visionaries brand. Now, I will of course admit that I'm sure Hasbro did come up with the majority of the toy designs and the characters' backgrounds, perhaps working closely with the writers of the animated series to create something, if you will pardon the pun, magical. While not being able to completely explain all of the mystery of who was responsible for the Visionaries, it did at least provide another nugget of knowledge. Also of interest is that thanks to their Wikipedia entry and the website for Abrams Gentile, we know the company was formed back in 1986, thanks to John and Anthony Gentile and Marty Abrams. These three, by the way, also had a hand in creating the Nintendo Power Glove. Marty Abrams is a name I am familiar with because he was also the company president for Mego until its bankruptcy in 1983. He took over the role of president from his father in 1971, which means he was in charge when they were producing the Micronauts line. Crazy how all this stuff ties together, right? The creative director for the Visionaries animated series is credited to Jay Bacall, who is actually Jules Bacall, co-founder of the Griffin Bacall Advertising Agency and, of course, Sunbow Productions. So, to me, it sounds like it was Hasbro, Sunbow Productions, and Abrams Gentile that all worked closely together to bring the Visionaries to toy shelves and television in 1987. The action figures that Hasbro produced for the Visionaries were a little bigger than the G.I. Joe line of 3 3/4-inch figures. And since the story involved knights of a medieval society, the figures were obviously wearing armor, which, thanks to the comic book, we learned they forged from the leftover technology that no longer functioned. So the toys included removable helmets and weapons. The armored chest pieces for all the characters that made up the heroic Spectral Knights and the evil Darkling Lords had some minor similarities, but everything from the shoulder area, the arms, and legs of the figures were entirely unique for each character. I know that many places online have stated that the cost of producing the holograms for the chest pieces, the character's animal totem that was displayed on the figure's chest plate, in addition to those used on the power staffs, drove up the cost of producing the toys, which in turn raised the prices of the figures themselves. But if each character has a unique armor style, which included their helmets and weapons, that surely also raised the manufacturing price too, right? One of the things I thought was odd, even back in my youth with the Visionaries toys, was with the characters having the ability to transform into these animals, Hasbro didn't include plastic versions of these forms. Granted, if the toy manufacturers were already worried about the price of the toy, I realize that creating these animals would have just driven the price up even more. Although in my case, I just picked up a bag of cheap zoo animals and used those. Now, I'm going to jump into the story for the toy line in just a little bit. But first, in 1987, Hasbro produced, in total, 12 action figures for their Visionaries Knights of the Magical Light line. 4 carded figures for the Spectral Knights, Leoric, Arzon, Witterquick, and Cryotech, with the 4 carded figures for the Darkling Lords being Darkstorm, Cravex, Lexor, and Sindar. 2 more Spectral Knights were produced and packaged with vehicles. The Lancer Cycle came with Ektar, as I've already talked about, and the Capture Chariot came with Feral. For the Darkling Lords, Mortrid was packaged with the Skyclaw, and Recon had the massive Dagger Assault Vehicle. As the toy line did not find its audience at the time, the 2 female characters of Galadria and Verilina were sadly not produced. Just from the names alone, you can probably tell who was good and who was bad. The 8 carded figures came with power staffs. Turning the staff one way for the Spectral Knight characters would reveal a unicorn, with the Darkling Lords being represented by a dragon. Twisting it in the other direction reveals an image of that character's power. So, for Arzon, the bearer of knowledge looks to be a humanoid, with a large brain and a starburst representing knowledge erupting from his head. Now, try as I might, I couldn't initially find what artist was responsible for creating the sculptures for these 3D holograms used by Hasbro for the Visionaries. Once again, thanks to Visionaries.net, although it was a little buried, I did find my answer. 2 freelance artists by the name of Bill Merkline and David Dunn. Real quick, thanks to an interview I located on the Transformers BotTalk.com site, Don was responsible for only a select few of the holograms. And Bill Merkline, by the way, is a legendary sculptor who had previously worked with Hasbro, credited with nearly 70 sculpts for the action figures of the G.I. Joe line. And as a nod, apparently to his talent over the years, Hasbro named the character of Merklin after him. I assume that with Merkline doing figure sculpts for G.I. Joe, he was also responsible for the Visionaries line, at least for some of them. Thanks to that interview on BotTalk.com, which, like with Visionaries.net, I will include the links to in the article for this podcast, a member of the forums named Donja was able to get in contact with David Dunn, and, among other things, asked the artist how and what he was involved with on the Visionaries toy line. David replied, quote, "I got involved through master sculptor Bill Merkline. We both lived in Queens, New York at the time. You probably know of him. He had been working for American Banknote Holographics on the Visa Dove, and he knew of my model making and diorama work for the Field Museum in Chicago through mutual friends. He got me some work for ABNH and introduced me to Steve Kravitsky, Hasbro's freelance artist manager. Steve hired me to do work on G.I. Joe and the Inhumanoids line, and then gave me more work when Visionaries was being created. I didn't do any of the figure stuff, only the hologram sculpts. Here's a list of them. The names are the ones used by Hasbro at the time for invoicing purposes. They may have been different once the line went into production. Fear, Strength, Decay, Knowledge, 2 Dragons, Stallion, Ramus, Ramazon, Draculin, Skulls, 3 Bats, Spiders, 2 Horses, 3 Horses, 3 Demons. There were other sculpts that I did from that same period that may also be related to Visionaries. They were Triceratops SK, Cybron SK, and Griffin. These were all done between January and September 1986. End quote. Now, from the interview, it sounds like to me Don also was working on some of the holographic images for the unproduced second wave of Visionaries action figures. If you're a fan of the Visionaries, I would highly suggest you take the time to read the interview. Interesting insight from Don on how Hasbro was operating at the time. I also want to add that it appears that Bill Merkline got his foot in the door at Hasbro thanks to the work he did on an unproduced line of toys for 1983's Krull. Thanks to the 29 pages of forum talk at BotTalk.com, I also found out that legendary Batman artist Neil Adams was responsible for the character art design for possibly the first wave, but most assuredly some of the unproduced second series characters. I know this because some of his original artwork was up for grabs with Heritage Auctions. Okay, I think it's time we start tackling the stories and characters that were provided for the Visionaries, courtesy of both the Star comic book series from Marvel, as well as the excellent animated series. There are some differences between the comic and cartoon. I won't go into all of them, but point out a few of the more interesting differences. The Visionaries animated series debuted on Sunday, the 20th of 1987, and, like the toy line, regrettably had only one season, for a total of 13 episodes. Visionaries, besides the rather remarkable animation, also was unique in that the series had a sense of the story continuing through every episode, featuring things like callbacks to previous episodes later on, etc. That has a lot to do with Flint Dill writing 7 of the 13 episodes, with 3 others each being scripted by both Buzz Dixon as well as Douglas Booth. All 3 being well known for writing for all manner of animated series back in the day, from G.I. Joe and Transformers to Mr. T, Batman the Animated Series, Thundar the Barbarian, and even Mighty Max, to name a few of the projects they have written for. In the first episode entitled The Age of Magic Begins, we get a few minutes to see the technological wonder that is the planet Prismos. For 7,000 years, the inhabitants have mastered the planet and its resources. That naturally and violently changes when the 3 sons of Prismos realign, killing all technology and forcing the inhabitants to once again to have to work and provide for themselves. While the comic goes into greater detail and gives us glimpses of how violent and futile everything becomes after technology has failed, the animated series jumps ahead a couple of years later after the introduction. The city of New Valaric is ruled by Leoric. Thanks to the comic, we know he was originally the city's governor. He is a wise and just leader and has the support of both Ektar, who was once a police officer, and Feral to keep the kingdom and its people safe from the likes of Darkstorm and his lackey Mordred and a conniving mercenary known as Recon, who, during the Age of Technology, was a master thief and someone who Ektar continuously tried to arrest. It is to both Darkstorm and Leoric that the wizard Merklin pays a visit to, explaining to the leaders that this is the second age of magic, and that located in the shrine at the heart of his home is the powerful magic they can use to protect or take control of Prismos. Merklin apparently visits all the various factions that have sprung up since the fall of technology, and promises them the same thing, if within a fortnight they can show up to the Iron Mountain and make it past all of the traps and other dangers, they will be rewarded with some of the magic. And while the comic yet again shows that perhaps some of these traps, in addition to the actions of Darkstorm and his minions, are quite deadly, the cartoon shows us that the many knights that fail are not killed in the process. When all is said and done, of the hundreds of knights who arrived at the Iron Mountain, it is only 14 that pass the test and reach the inner shrine of Merklin. As you might recall from the number of figures I mentioned that were produced earlier, it ends up that both the Spectral Knights and the Darkling Lords have exactly 7 members, where the likes of Cryotech, Galadriel, Witterquick, and Arzon join up with Leoric, Ektar, and Feral because it's the right thing to do. Darkstorm finds Sindar, Kravex, Viralina, and Lexor caught in a trap, not releasing them until they swear allegiance to him. Within that shrine, each of the knights is granted an animal totem that reflects their inner spirit and how they were able to overcome a certain obstacle or hardship. Sindar, who is voiced by the Transformers' Peter Cullen, yes, Optimus Prime himself, is bestowed the animal totem of the gorilla due to his climbing ability and strength when fighting on an ice bridge with Cryotech, who is voiced by Bernard Earhart, who also voiced Psykill in the GoBots animated series. Cryotech is gifted the totem of the grizzly bear for his own remarkable showing of strength during that fight. Galadriel and Viralina had a nearly deadly encounter in a watery fight involving a kraken, thanks to her killer instincts. Kicking Galadriel towards the Kraken, Viralina, voiced by the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman's Jennifer Darling, earns the totem of the shark, with Galadriel receiving the animal totem of the dolphin for being smart enough in such a situation to find a way out of the deadly grasp of the Kraken. Galadriel was voiced by the legendary Susan Blue of Transformers and Galaxy High fame. Mordred is a preening buffoon and was wonderfully voiced by the iconic Jonathan Harris, Dr. Zachary Smith from the original Lost in Space series. It should be pointed out that Mordred is quite dedicated to Darkstorm. For his overwhelming fawning over his master, he earns the Totem of the Beetle. Now, Let's pause for just one second. You might think he's totally being given the shaft, but how useful would it be to become a beetle and sneak into New Valeric unseen to spy for Darkstorm? Arzon, who is voiced by G.I. Joe in the Transformers, Hal Rail, thanks to overcoming both treachery by Darkstorm and a deadly magic trap of the Iron Mountain, crafting sort of wings to glide to safety, is given the animal totem of the eagle. Ektar, for having the keen sense to prevent an ambush from the Darkling Lords, is gifted the totem of the fox, and is voiced by Michael McConaughey, who has worked on everything from Robotech to being the voice of the Agency in the Crackdown games. In addition, he also provided the voice of the cowardly and untrustworthy Darkling Lord known as Lexor, who is granted the animal totem of an armored armadillo, as all he is concerned with is his own safety, whether he will admit it or not. Darkstorm for being incredibly evil, but also skilled enough to climb his way out of a deadly pit, is bestowed the animal totem of a giant mollusk. This thing is creepy, Lovecraftian in nature. Darkstorm is voiced by none other than the original Transformers Starscream, Chris Latta. In fact, he also does double duty, voicing another of the Darkling Lords, providing the voice of Kravex, and for setting a trap that chased off fellow knights and plundering their weapons they left behind, he is bestowed the totem of the Phylot, which is a scavenger-like pterodactyl creature on the planet of Prismos. The mercenary Recon earns himself the totem of the Lizard for his stealth and overall treachery, the character being voiced by Roscoe Lee Brown, perhaps best known for his role in John Wayne's The Cowboys, and as the voice of Box in 1976's Logan's Run. Brown also did double duty as the voice of none other than Merklin.
These animals are the magical representation of your true inner beings. When you need them most, you will become them. But remember, they are like emotions, powerful, yet sometimes uncontrollable.
You mean we fought our way into the shrine for magic we can't control?
Get it through your dull brain that I have no intention of cheating you. Now, dip your staffs into the pool and you will see a wondrous transformation.
What about those of us who have no staff?
You will discover in time that you also have great powers.
Jim Cummings, who at that point was the future Darkwing Duck and voice of Winnie the Pooh, and an actor with a staggering 547 other voice acting roles, voiced Witterquick, who is granted the cheetah as his totem when he manages to run faster than a series of deadly crushing traps in the Iron Mountain. Leoric, for showing courage in the face of a stone giant, where others might have run, was granted the totem of the lion, and is voiced by Neil Ross, who played none other than Shipwreck, Dusty, and Buzzer in the G.I. Joe animated series, as well as Herc Armstrong in the Inhumanoids, and one other character from an impressive resume that ties Jim, the Inhumanoids, G.I. Joe, and the Transformers to the same animated universe. The reporter known as Hector Ramirez. Feral for having the keen smell to lead both Leoric and Ektar out of a labyrinth-like maze in the Iron Mountain is bestowed the totem of the wolf and was voiced by Beau Weaver, who is probably best known for his work in the Transformers animated series as Octane, and both Clark Kent and Superman in the 1988 Ruby Spears animated Superman cartoon. Whew. I think that covers all the main characters for the Visionaries. Now, in that clip with Merklin rightfully losing his temper with Ektar, he mentions to the knights that brought staffs, which, in terms of the story, were to represent their kingdoms, to dip them into the shrine's pool of magic. This, in turn, gives these particular knights power staffs to use, with Leoric's staff being able to grant him wisdom, Cryotech earning strength in the form of a mighty archer firing a powerful bolt, Witterquick, while already fast, can call on light speed. And, as you probably already know, Arzon has the Staff of Knowledge. Darkstorm's staff of power is charged with decay, in addition to the ability to reverse the effect. Kravex's power staff inflicts overwhelming fear, with Sindar's staff granting him the power of destruction in the form of a gigantic green demon who lays waste to everything with a massive sword. And, appropriately enough, Lexor, who is concerned only with his well-being, his staff grants him invulnerability. Now, also in that clip a moment ago, you heard Mordred complaining about the fairness of those who didn't bring a staff with them. Merklin's comment about they too finding they have additional magic is true. It is only Ektar, Feral, Galadriel, Viralina, Mordred, and Recon who can bestow magic to vehicles. Furthermore, only in the comics, both Viralina and Galadriel end up obtaining magic shields, with the former granting the ability to cause sickness and the latter the power of healing. Now, you might recall, I said that the power staffs and even vehicles are triggered by an ancient verse. One of my favorites was Sindar's, who had the power of destruction, and when he would hold the staff up and say, "By nature's hand, by craft, by art, what once was one, now fly apart!" causing that demonic giant to appear for a short time, and if you go by the cartoon, it would deplete the charge for the power staff. Just as I praised the writers of the Visionaries cartoon earlier, Flint Dill, in particular in this case, because with that power staff depleted, it means the knights would have to do a favor for Merklin to recharge their staffs. A simple, but very smart concession, possessing all that magical power. Because owing Merklin a favor was shown to be a time-consuming affair to complete one of his quests. In addition, even back when the show originally aired, I was impressed by the writers making sure to show that even the Spectral Knights aren't exactly 100% squeaky clean. And there are some noble elements to members of the Darkling Lords. Case in point, after using his destruction ability, Sindar realizes in horror that a kitten has become trapped in the rubble, and completely calls off the monstrous force, ignoring Darkstorm's furious commands while he frees the animal. Of course, I should also point out that Merklin is playing his own long game, and as we later learn, he is not the only wizard to have returned to Prismos with this second age of magic. Also, while only shown in the comics, apparently the more time a knight spends in animal form, the harder it is for them to return to human form, as well as their personalities start to become affected by the animal totem, which I also saw as another way to smartly explain why the likes of Cryotech isn't immediately transforming into his giant grizzly bear form at the start of a fight. It is truly a shame that the Visionaries weren't able to go longer than one season for the cartoon and one wave with the toys. I'm not sure I did an adequate job in this episode of explaining what made both the toy line and animated series and comic books so special. But if I had the ability and resources to resurrect a property in this day and age, it would be the Visionaries. And perhaps the Adventures of the Galaxy Rangers, too. While, for some bizarre reason, the Visionaries animated series hasn't been released to DVD or Blu-ray here in the States. Apparently, the UK a few years back did get a DVD release. Furthermore, it wasn't too long ago when Hasbro announced they were going to create a cinematic universe, much like Marvel Comics has. With the Transformers, G.I. Joe, Visionaries, Mask, and Rom the Space Knight as some of the properties to be included. That has sadly not panned out. Although IDW Publishing did produce a 5-issue miniseries in 2018, where a new generation of Visionaries crossed paths with the Transformers. So, what does the future hold for the Visionaries? Only Merklin is wise enough to know for sure. Perhaps he's just waiting for a new generation of Visionaries himself to accept his gifts.
I seek brave men and women of vision. I wish to teach them the ways of magic.
And I think that brings us to the end of our podcast for today, friends. Thank you, as always, for taking the time to listen to the show. For what it's worth, you can generally find me writing multiple times a day on the Pop Culture Retrorama site. If you want to check it out, you can go to www.popculturetrorama.com. In addition to that site, I am also contributing daily on the Facebook page for the site as well, in addition to the Diary of an Arcade Employee and Saturday Frights Facebook page. If you have any comments on the podcast or maybe suggestions for a future episode, you can contact me at vicsagepopculture@gmail.com. The Pop Culture Retrorama podcast is available on iTunes and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. If you like the show, why not help us attract new listeners by leaving us a review, a rating, and subscribing on iTunes? Help spread the word about the show with your friends and fellow pop culture aficionados. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our show is courtesy of EarlGreensTheLogbook.com, kindly used with his permission. As always, I want to personally thank The Retroist, who for nearly 10 years allowed me to share my love of all things retro, including creating podcasts like this one and more. The Retroist, I am happy to say, after a short hiatus, is back online, working on new podcasts and still sharing things retro a couple times a week. Before we go, the next show is going to be a listener's choice. So look for a poll I will be posting on Facebook on the Pop Culture Retrorama page. This has been a Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. Goodbye, and thanks for listening. The Pop Culture Retrorama podcast is not affiliated with or authorized by Hasbro, Marvel Comics, Sumbo Entertainment, or any of the businesses and individuals that have been mentioned in the show. All music and sound clips from the Visionaries and TV commercials are the property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Audio clips are included for the purpose of review, criticism, and commentary only, and are not intended to infringe.
Get it through your dull brain that I have no intention of cheating you.
End of line.